Technophobies.
Welcome back to the Fogies. It's episode two. We've made it to the second one. Let's start with an introduction to Mike. Mark, who's learning how to play the ukulele. Over to you, Mark.
I'm Mark. I'm Mark Holder in Somerset, and I'm learning the ukulele. And I also have my own private cloud, because we're going to talk about cloud today, Sean, aren't we?
Yeah, cloudy with a hint of sunshine. And we got Michelle as well, back from Colorado. Hi, Michelle.
Hey, everyone. Michelle Hovett. Excited to be here again today. Can't wait for our second episode and see what we uncover.
And we got Jim. Jim, talk to us, Jim.
Yes, hello. I'm here in Leeds. I've looked out the window and I can't see any clouds.
It's complicated, right? So as fogies, we understand the complexity, the complication, because we've worked in government for a long time. But how can we unpick that complexity? Now, being an old fogey means that, you know, maybe our memory isn't as good as it used to be. And so I'm suggesting we use a mnemonic, not a mnemonic drill or a mnemonic harp, but actually a mnemonic. And we were looking at what a mnemonic is, and it's actually a pattern of letters, ideas, or associations which assist with the memory. So today we're going to talk about, because we haven't got Google today to look at those complexities, we're going to talk about it's complicated in government for cloud. If we're talking about government cloud, it's complicated. What are the greatest complications or the greatest challenges associated with government cloud?
So one of the things that I did early on as cloud came out was to figure out how to deal with the complexities of legal and then how to afford all the different clouds that are out there. So to me, if I was picking up the complexity list, I would pick legal and affordability. So cloud is growing. There's a research document from Flexera, and it says the average enterprise, now this is all industries, not just public sector, but the average enterprise has 2.6 public clouds in use as a platform and 2.7 private clouds in use as a platform. So they have hybrids going on. And meanwhile, it says organizations are using 110 different cloud applications throughout their business. So I can tell you that I had over 800 apps running on the city that I worked for, and a big percentage of them were moving to the cloud. And because I was moving to the cloud rapidly, and it meant people and contracts and understanding pricing, I got assigned my own city attorney. They're like, what in the world is Michelle doing down there? What are all these legal contracts coming through the door rapidly about all these different clouds? And so it got legally confusing really, really quickly. And so actually my city attorney that worked with me became a cloud expert here in Colorado, because he had to, of all the stuff I was throwing at them, to figure out how can we manage these 800 applications differently. And so I think, you know, unfortunately, when you have so many different applications, it leads to that complexity. But it also leads to complexity if you start everything with an attorney, right? Just read through all these documents. It makes things kind of hard to get stuff done. So combine attorneys with all of the complexity they bring and the risk adversity they have, and then how do you scale that? So if you have line of business clouds that you're bringing in the door, how do you scale that and how do you get that to grow and be affordable with all these one-offs? And so to me, then you had to look at the dollar amounts and you had to look at the contracts and you had to bring in legal. And so at least at the beginning, those are the two things that kind of pop out for me, because of the pandemic, we're growing even more right now, right? Everyone's moving to the cloud in public sector to be able to be agile, to be able to provide services for citizens.
Can I ask you a question then, Michelle?
Sure.
Can I ask you a question? Because out of interest, because you've actually done it, you've been out there and done it, and when you looked at those, how many did you say it was?
800.
How many cloud applications? 800 cloud applications. Was it done one by one, or did you look at it? Did you do a lot of grouping? Because what I've read is that if you're looking at it, and obviously the idea of doing this is cost and efficiency, cost savings. Did you look at grouping them together?
So
as applications.
Great question, Mark. So what I wanted to do is really double down on this today and talk about how we did that. So When we started cloud, you know, there's new applications coming to the market, and they're all one-offs at the time. So originally we were saying, what's the best application we bring to the city for getting to the business outcome? And we would solve that problem. So we actually had a strategic plan and a playbook, worked with every department to figure out what they wanted to do, how they wanted to do it. And that was the overall 2 to 5 year strategic plan. And the playbook would be how we'd implement that every year. And so we would try and group them. So if some applications had overlap of different types of features and functions that would work in multiple departments, we tried to look at that. But I can tell you that got complex too. And so at some point, depending on the cost of the application, we would actually just bring in the smaller applications and let the department use what they needed to. And run.
So Michelle, I'd say, so you're to legal and affordability.
Yep.
Is legal more the legal complexity for the vendor, the provider, or is it the legal complexity for the government to do this in the first place, or both?
Legal complexity probably for the government to do it originally, because there's a lot of different rules that we all had to, you know, die on our sword for, that we couldn't cross those boundaries. But then you really need to be savvy, and that's why I got a city attorney to help me out, because who owns the data? Where does the data go when the contract's done? How do you get your data back? How can you bring it back to on-premise if you need to? All those things need to be looked at, because everyone does it differently. And unfortunately, I've seen many of my former peers and myself got caught up of reading the data and the information in the legal contract. But at the end of the day, the company owns your data. And that doesn't fly when it's, you know, public data and owned truly by the citizen, in my opinion. So there's just a lot of legal complexities, things that you need to look through.
And affordability, is it cloud is more affordable, so they go for more affordable, or the current way of doing on-premise is less affordable and governments have tight budgets, so they have to move? What's the motivation of affordability?
I think there's a lot of things that you need to look at for that. So if it's a smaller application that provides great value to the department or organization, ultimately then to the citizen or business in your community, then I think you can move to that one pretty quickly. But if it goes across multiple departments, then you need to look at really scrutinizing those applications. So you don't want to bring one in for each department, say planning and zoning, which then leads to permitting and all the things that comes with expanding your community or redeveloping your community. So you really want to look at those with more scrutiny and start looking at platform type applications. So if there's platforms out there you can grow on and you can start incorporating data and other things into, that's the key, I think, for affordability. A platform is more agnostic that you can use across multiple departments within a city or county. So to me, that's what's important to me, is, you know, looking at that layer of how can I get the best bang for the buck, short term and long term.
So what I'm saying is Michelle right? Do you agree with her?
Be controversial. I was going to jump into legal, but I think that horse is bolted, to use my Michelle's analogy. But I will talk a little bit about legal from the other side of it eventually. And I think in the UK we've been quite progressive in getting cloud. You know, if you look at the government cloud store, there's a sort of Amazon type capability where any public sector organization can go there and choose whether that's hardware, software, or service, and I can almost see clicking by. And as we know, government procurement, which is a whole other topic perhaps for another episode, government procurement is slightly complicated. So we introduced this model in the UK called G-Cloud, which is fantastic because you can go on there and add it probably now. There are 100,000 different types of technology, hardware, software, and services where you can directly work, go to competition, choose and buy, you can do it rapidly. However, in order for a vendor to become compliant and get on those sorts of dynamic framework, I think in my experience working for one particular round of the G-Cloud Awards, it took 900 internal escalations to get the internal approvals to list those cloud services on the government cloud framework. So whilst I completely understand from your side of the fence, in your past career, you had to have your best buddy attorney sitting side by side, you know, advising you, guiding you, learning you, and becoming a cloud guru. Similarly, on the vendor side, is almost, if not more complex, to reshape our standard offerings to where they comply with government cloud requirements. So I think it's a slightly different take on Neo, but I guess my takeaway is that both sides of the partnership need to learn how to do business differently. I think that's a learning journey. It's probably going to take us another 1 or 2 years before we become really proficient at both buying and selling within the cloud space. And I see that's I don't think it's impossible, I don't think it's insurmountable, but it's the reality of self-cloud services that both sides need to learn new skills and new ways to do business. And then the second point, Sean, I would probably add, and probably again for another day, another debate, is the complexities of data residency. So Michelle, you talked about where is my data, where does my data go, how do I get my data back? Equally, where is the cloud? Now, I know Mark has a cloud with him, but that's not the sort of cloud we're talking about. You need to
explain this just for those listening to the podcast.
Yeah, for those listening at home, Mark has built...
No, his wife.
No. My provider has supplied it.
His better half.
Your infrastructure. Your infrastructure as a service provider
Holder.
has built your own private cloud, which is a physical cloud. So
it looks a wee bit like cotton candy.
And I think so. Just to finish, Sean, I think to point around data again. I think there's more work to be done. That's the whole thing about. Where is my data while I'm consuming the cloud service? And then secondly, what about data residency and data sovereignty? Is it okay? You know, we're in the UK now. It used to be okay to have your data in the EU. Well, that's kind of changing because now we're saying if we want data on a cloud, it has to be a cloud in the UK. So I think the whole kind of thought around data residency, data sovereignty, again, not insurmountable, but it's...
You know, and I would poke at this a little bit too, Jim. I really like what you said, because this is a partnership now, right? You're giving up some of your hardware, your software, you're reallocating your team to do other things to help make this successful for your customers. And so it's a partnership. And I can tell you, for those companies that we dealt with cloud contracts, I had, you know, a top five nice vendor list that I would go to every time. I knew they had my back, they could trust me. And then I had the bottom five, on the other hand, naughty list of people that it's like, I don't care if they call me, we're not doing business with them, you know, we're just done, because they had, you know, done some things as they were learning in the cloud too. And so I think it's this true partnership to make this run in the future. So I think all sides need to come together and come to the middle and really figure out how to drive the best outcomes for the citizens.
So, Mark, Hootsuite Digital 2022 report have talked about, they've done lots of analysis of various things. You know, there are 8 billion people on this planet, 67% are mobile users, 63% use the internet. But a very interesting statistic, you know, an average of people spend 7 hours a day on the internet. Now, believe that or not, but they only spend 3.2 hours on the TV. So, When you look at this, you know, Michelle has put it out there that affordability and legal. Jim agrees with the legal and the data for government cloud.
Okay, I think they keep changing, because I think data sovereignty, as Jim said, well, I see that as being, and not to get into the current state of play of the world, but I think that drives the change, because whereas some people would have been saying, we have to have our data in country, they're now coming, and I've spoken to people in the last 2 weeks saying, actually, we need to change our mind. We need to go somewhere where our data is at its most safe. And I think people are beginning to realise, although I think it's still a big challenge, that data security in the cloud is paramount. But people have got to kind of mentally get over that. But I think, can I just add, as part of the, I was looking down through the mnemonic around complicated, and I look at outcomes and innovation, because I think the other thing that's happening, and it's happened throughout COVID, is that people have needed to do things really, really quickly to get an outcome. And you could not have done that using a traditional on-prem approach. Whereas with a cloud approach, and especially, you know, and it does counter the data residency thing. I'm sure we could debate that for a long time. We've seen people push things out really quickly, whether it be for, you know, pandemic registration, track and trace, and you can see people are doing all sorts of things really quickly around supporting refugees and the whole vulnerability space, because it has to be done really, really quickly. So I think outcomes and innovation is a driver, and but that's been the challenge. Can I also say, I think, and I'm sure as we're old fogies, and I think I was probably with you at the time, Sean, and we did a presentation to a senior policeman, and I put a screen up in front of him, and it had one word on the screen he didn't like. He said, that is so wrong. He said, that shouldn't be investigation, it should be incident. And he closed the conversation down, wouldn't speak to us. You don't understand policing, you know. Now, I'm sure he's well retired by now, but the point being is that I now think people look at public sector, people will look across industry, and where they can, they will replicate it and reuse it.
Well, I did a little bit of homework, and this report talked about groups of people, age groups of people with the greatest concern about security on the internet. And the age group that has the most concern is 55 to 64. Welcome to the Fogies. And the second greatest is 45 to 54. So, you know, one of my top issues with government going to the cloud, you know, is thinking about, you know, is the challenge about the citizen service delivery. You know, it's complicated because citizens are used to using the internet. They want their access to the services online. They want the access from home. But I think I agree with you that the legislative framework, are you meeting the point of presence? Are you addressing data sovereignty? Are you complying with the standards? Do you have the right certification? Do you have the right people responsible for that data? These are the things that I agree with are the biggest hurdles for shifting to the cloud. And affordability, I think the pandemic and the economic squeeze we're seeing, and more so now, means the core business of government isn't about managing IT with data centers. And I think that's why I think that complexity, but then you get into the political aspect that you want jobs locally, you want job highly skilled digital skills locally. And so the politics of the cloud, where it is, where it sits, who provides those services, always also adds to that complexity and challenge. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I've read the same, Sean. I read a lot about, and I think this is more about the worry, isn't it? People worry about the skills gap. They worry about maybe where they've already invested in their own data centers, and at what point do they make that move?
Well, I think it just makes you more agile, more able to respond. You know, I think the folks that went to cloud a little bit before the pandemic, as we talked about last time, came out of it in a better place. They're able to move and get things done quicker. They're able to identify some of their legacy systems that weren't working. In the U.S., it was a lot of the benefit systems.
Michelle, as a citizen, can you not tell those that aren't quite as innovative and in terms of the delivery you're getting as a citizen? And you see some aspects, I'm not going to criticize anything specifically, but you can see some stuff that is really smooth, it's right, really slick, and you think that, and they've done that because they've been innovative, they have adopted cloud, whether it be hybrid or whatever, they've adopted a business process which is really effective. And then you see the reverse. And where the reverse is now, it's horrific, you know?
Good next segue, I think, Sean. There's a lot to think about here. So the business models that I think about, you have people that are adopting maybe one or two small independent cloud solutions to fit some business needs. You have some that have gone more all in and are looking at platforms. You have some that, you know, aren't thinking a lot about the complexities because they have private clouds in some cases. They have public clouds for some solutions. They have hybrid clouds. They have all sorts of different clouds. And I think that's the conversation about affordability that I was talking about earlier. When we're seeing that spending on public cloud services is supposed to surpass 500 billion by 2023, and that as a result, cloud adoption will grow by 22% across all IT enterprise spending. You have to stop and pause as a technologist and figure out, I'm moving from CapEx to OpEx. How do I move my team? How do I move my business processes? How do I move my strategy? And the folks that I think that look at all of those models and put it all together and have that plan holistically looking across all of their organization, looking at their customer, in many cases, citizens or businesses in your community, those are the ones that are providing that one-stop shop, if you will, for applications, easy to pick up and use your phone. You never have to go to brick and mortar. Some city halls right now in the U.S. are kind of empty. You don't need to be physically on site. You can send your plans in digitally. You don't have to show up and spread out a roll of papers and look through them. So things are changing pretty rapidly. So I think all of this will evolve.
So do you think as technophobes, I was just going to say a quick remark, we go through the same mindset change when we went from
I know, Jim. No, I've gone back with.
I know you did, Mark.
We need some ukulele.
I had a Betamax.
Yeah.
I had a Betamax for a
day. Yeah, but we went through that mindset, didn't we? Well, I was just going to say, we went through that mindset change, didn't we? We invested in this kind of record player, we had all our discs, we had a CD player, we had millions of these things stacked everywhere, we had no catalogue of them, and then suddenly.
It's a very valid point, and I think it brings the old and the new together, because here am I, a vinyl fan, right? But also an absolute I love streaming music, and that's a very hybrid thing. And really, there's a reason for this, because you know I can take a piece of music, I can listen to it. I listen to it streaming first, so I use the cloud to check out my thing. And I, when I really like that album, I go and buy it physically. Now, back in the old days, I go, I like that band, I hear that tune, and I rushed out with my pocket money, right? Bought this album, played the first track, and the rest were crap, you know? And I've got loads of albums in there, which I'd have never bought. I should have just bought the single. So, you know, is that a bit of a hybrid?
I think one foggy thing is when I was, you know, earlier on in IT, you know, in government, you used to be proud of your server room. You know, people would take you to the server room, high availability, and they'd tap the boxes and they'd go, look at this. And people would be proud because they would see that as the core value, something physical, something hardware you can see. But, you know, people, the Generation Z, which is the largest demographic, another bit of research there, they haven't had that experience of tapping on server rooms, you know, so they don't see that physicality, the proximity of the hardware as being as important. And I think this is something that maybe we have that is our restraint.
Yeah, I think it's going from the old to the new, just like we've been talking about. And to me, I you know, you need some on-premise, perhaps, depending on, I had three levels of security. When I looked at cloud applications, and the first one was, why would we not go to cloud first? The data is important, but it's public data. We need to secure it, but it's not, you know, HIPAA data. It's not regulated data or PCI data, any of that stuff that can get out there. Level two might have some of those data mixed in. Level three is when you get into maybe some policing systems, you don't want youth records, health records, other things putting out there. So that would be like level three, they would get the most scrutiny. But I think, you know, to me, I saw over time that those servers in my computer room were, the racks are getting emptier and emptier, and they look like boat anchors to me. I mean, there's some stuff that had to stay there, don't get me wrong. We needed the network equipment. We needed stuff to make everything connect. But over time, I'd rather get rid of that and then bring in applications in a smart way, either public cloud, private cloud, hybrid, you know, platform as a service, software as a service, because I can focus on the business needs versus trying to patch a server or trying to upgrade a server. I had a computer replacement fund that was mostly CapEx, right? And I'd charge everyone for servers. I'd charge everyone for network equipment on top of their regular desktops and other things. And so I always had money sitting there to be able to purchase the servers in 5 years. But I would actually, we were able to take that and move that to OpEx, just like we're moving from vinyl to playlists. Or maybe back to vinyl again, but yeah. Hybrid.
Yeah.
Hybrid.
Yeah.
But simple.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to have a list on my wall that said, you know, 10 things that kept a CIO up at night. And cloud solved a lot of those. I mean, it moved it to a different category, maybe, of contracts and affordability and partnership trust, but yeah.
Internet users are up. The number of 92% of people access on their mobile devices the internet. People are working remotely. People are shopping more and more online. People are learning more and more online. Private sector is moving to the cloud very quickly. So why, if private sector are moving to the cloud so quickly, why is government the laggard? You know, is it the laggard? And is it because it's complicated and all of the issues we just discussed they've got to think about, and these are really genuine issues that they have to consider?
I think they are, but...
I was just going to say, that's a little bit of the oxymoron that I have about it, all my money, my financial data, everything about me is in the cloud.
But is it trust? So trust, do you trust government to always look after your data and not use it in certain ways that it wasn't captured for? And I think that trust and kind of confidence about it being used in the right way, I think is... adds to the complexity, the complicatedness of cloud and government, don't you think?
I tend to naturally trust the way the government would hold my data. I feel more comfortable. I don't trust private sector at all. I mean, you know, I really don't, because it's being used to target me with adverts. I don't want this rubbish, you know. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, all the breaches tend to be more in the private sector than they do in the public sector.
Yeah, well, as you know, Mark, I spent a year of my life reading all the primary legislation around data sharing in the UK, and it's very clear that there are particularly stringent rules and regulations about how government uses data, and it cannot use citizens, individuals, organisation data for commercial purpose. It's black and white, it's the law. Whereas in your case, you just cited, you're being targeted by EBCD companies, where you might have clicked on a banner, you might have found out what a cookie is, which I didn't know about until recently, and then suddenly you get bombarded with all sorts of things. So actually, I agree with you. I trust government, I trust the fact.
I just have a quick point, Sean, and I'll turn it back to you. Apologies. I'm going to call all three of you fogies across the pond for your cloud for government. You know, the U.S. is, I think, leading the way in cloud. Governments have been moving to cloud since 2014 here. So we have more people in cloud than not. So some of the conversations we've had today maybe relate geographically based on cloud sovereignty, the ability to secure that data in a certain place. And those are just maturity models that either companies or cloud providers, hyperscalers need to get past. But to me, I don't think it's always stuck in the government mentality. It's more in the logistics of how do you make this run and secure it.
So let's agree that it's complicated. We've gone through lots of different issues. Our next podcast, if anyone's going to listen to it, hopefully they will, let's look at the benefits of cloud and how they navigate, the case for navigating, you know, the benefits kind of examples. And I'm going to set you a challenge, exponential. You know, cloud, be cloud proud in government, exponential is our word, and we're going to have to assign some values against exponential using the mnemonic.
How many letters are in it?
There's a lot.
I think we just need to think about not only the benefits now, but also the benefits in the future, right? In 5 years' time, right now we're talking about different types of clouds and platforms and hybrid clouds, you know, all of that stuff. But I think instead in the future, we're going to talk about industry-specific native cloud apps. How do we automate, optimize, and use AI-driven workload and data to make government more efficient, more effective? I mean, there's ways with RPA, robotic process automation, to automate your enclosed on the books. Why do you have to have someone sitting in finance for the whole weekend at the end of the year by themselves trying to get this stuff done? So I think there's just new ways that we can use the cloud that I'd love to talk about exponentially.
And there's the metaverse. If you think about, you know, gaming, how that plays a role in services, you've got the digital twin, you've got the virtual world, you've got the virtual economy, the digital, you know, the. So I think all those things are going to be entwined in how government interacts, provides services. So look forward to it. So any final words? You know, do you want to play us out, Mark, with the ukulele before
I
could, we...
I just need to get bits of cloud out of my mouth. I seem to be... I've eaten a lot of my cloud, so...
Cloud and caravan.
I think you've been consumed by your cloud.
Sean wanted to finish off with... what did you want to finish off with? Your favourite
Laurel
Hardy?
I love Laurel Hardy, Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, but I can't sing it, so maybe next time. So thanks a lot. Please join in again. Take it away, Mark.
There's a beat in there somewhere, I think.
Oh, that's the as the cloud floats by.
Some people say that it's time to settle down.